I'm your host, Lee W. Johnson, and welcome to my podcast, where I talk about all things related to magic, witchcraft, demonolatry, and a whole load of other related things. If you would like to find out more about me, get in touch with me, or hire me for a service, please go to my website, leewjohnson.com, or check out my link tree in the description of this podcast. It's Monday again. Welcome back. Right. Well, welcome to the new week, should I say. Alright, so if you are new to this channel, then please hit the subscribe button if you enjoy my content. And, you know, hit the like button, share, comment. Helps the algorithm and will therefore help other people find the channel. Alright, so let's see. Today I've got two announcements and then I want to talk about using foreign languages in magic. Alright, so announcement one is, if you haven't seen the community post, the Redcover Magic School, which was $100 a month, is now $50 a month. And what you can expect from the Redcover Magic School is you get all of my video courses, my books. If you would like Reiki attunement, that's included also. And then all of the extra stuff that I put into the Grimoire, which is on the Discord channel. So you have to be on Discord in order to get the benefits. And we will also meet once a month. I'm probably going to do it every second week. We'll do it on a Sunday. And we'll meet once a month just to chat about everything that you've been learning through the video courses and the book and everything else, and any questions you may have regarding that. Alright, so that's Magic School. Then the other announcement is my podcast. So what I was previously doing was doing it seasonally. So every 3 months I was doing 3 months of podcasts once a week. And that was basically taking the previous videos, finding out which were the most popular, and then converting those into podcasts. What I'm going to do is I'm going to scrap the seasonal thing, and I'm going to actually take this video, the Monday video, and then the Wednesday Ask Lee video, and I'm going to put them together, take the audio out of them, put them together, and add them as a podcast on Fridays. So if you do like to listen to podcasts, the link is in the link tree, which you'll find in the description below. But you'll find me on Spotify. Well, Spotify is my favorite. It's on Google Podcasts, I think it's called, and on the Apple one as well. Yeah, my preferred is Spotify, so yeah, just tell you to go to Spotify. Anyway, so those are the announcements. So I'm still a bit sinusy, so I'm feeling a bit clogged up. Alright, so I was asked to talk about using foreign languages in magic and how important it is, how important it is to actually pronounce things properly also. And I am not a linguist by any stretch of the imagination, just bear that in mind. I am terrible with languages, I'm terrible at learning new languages. But when it does come to magic and specific rituals, I do feel it is important to learn and understand enough of the language to be able to pronounce it properly. So if you're doing a ritual which has Hebrew, for example, then learn how to pronounce the Hebrew words and learn how the letters are actually pronounced, like an I, which is an English I, would be pronounced as an E. The English A, would be an R, a long R as in father. You know, all of these things. So learn how the language is spoken, how it is pronounced, so that when you do go into ritual, you can at least say the words and the names of power and such things in its proper context. Now, a lot of people, I'm going to take the example of the LBRP, the Lesser Banishing Ritual of the Pentagram. A lot of people will go around the circle and they will pronounce the names of the archangels in an English fashion. So it would be Raphael, Michael, Gabriel, Uriel. I think that's how people pronounce them. I know the Michael and Gabriel, that's the glaring obvious ones. Now when you are speaking these names in the proper Hebrew pronunciation, then if you have a look at the word Michael, it's M-I-C-H-A-E-L, right? So the I in Hebrew is an E sound, the A in Hebrew is an R sound, and the E is an E. So you would actually be saying me, and the CH is a guttural ch sound, as in Loch Ness Monster. All right, so it's a ch. I can't do it at the moment, sinusitis. A ch sound, all right? So it's me, ha, ha, l. And also with Hebrew, what you'll find with the names, of power, the archangels and such things, is that that L at the end has a guttural stop to it. So it's, if you were to read it, it would be M-I-C-H-A, then there's a little guttural stop like an apostrophe, and then E-L. So you don't, when you're actually saying the name, you don't actually notice that guttural stop. It's Michael. So there's a slight pause there, very, very slight pause. Michael, Michael. So I'm not exaggerating here, obviously. But just bear that guttural stop in mind, because it's considered to be a pause to recognize the power of the universe, the power of God, El. All right. So there's a specific reason you do it, specific recognition. So if you are going to say these names in proper format, you know, you have to take all of these things into consideration. so you know, speaking in the Hebrew, speaking in Greek, these are things which we find in specific rituals that we may be performing. There is absolutely nothing wrong with speaking your native language in ritual and spell work. Absolutely nothing wrong. There's a sacredness to every single language. But it's just, as I said, if you are working a specific ritual which has these foreign languages in them, you want to learn how to say them properly. And when we look into the older languages, and you know, if we look into Hebrew, every single Hebrew letter has a spirit attached to it. It has an angelic force attached to it. So there is a particular sacredness to Hebrew language. If we go into Sanskrit, wow. And there's actually a really, really good book I read recently regarding Sanskrit. It's called, I'll get the name now, it's called Mantra Yoga and Primal Sound, Secrets of Seed or Bij Mantras. And it's by Dr. David Frawley. Now, you get a hold of that book, brilliant, brilliant book, especially if you want to use mantra in your practice, specifically Sanskrit mantras. The book goes through the Sanskrit alphabet and really, really examines it. It goes through the vowels, it goes through the consonants, it goes through all of the different aspects of the alphabet itself. And it takes each letter and it examines each letter. Now, the Sanskrit alphabet, all of these sounds are said to be, they were the sounds of creation. Om or Aum being the first one. And there's also Im, which is also considered from the different or different scriptures to be the same creation sound, if I can call it that, as Om. But when we are using Sanskrit mantras, again, good idea to learn how to actually pronounce all of the different letters. Especially when we have things like and arm, im and eem. There's different ways to actually say the same looking letters. I mean, transliterating them into Romanized English or Latinized English, or I'm not sure what it's called. But if you take the actual Sanskrit letter and you turn it into something which we can read in English, so the letter im would be an im, for instance. But then we have eem with a long e instead of a i. There's all these ways to pronounce the Sanskrit letters themselves, and you get to know them, and then you can pronounce them properly. You can therefore then pronounce the words properly, and you can then really then activate and use the Sanskrit letters and the mantras to the best of their benefit. Now, what I've found recently is quite interesting. I join a satsang. It's my afternoon. It's done in California, so it's their morning. So the satsang that they do at the Devi Mandir, it's recitation of different scriptures for an hour and a half by Swami Adityananda. And what I found is actually very interesting. About a month ago, it was a Sunday, and I was not feeling emotionally stable. I was feeling just worthless and just horrible. And I realized this isn't me, it's not my usual kind of emotional state, but I could not shift it, just couldn't shake it the whole day from the time I woke up. And that afternoon, I was going to skip the satsang because I just wasn't feeling it, and just didn't feel like doing it. I thought, no, let me sit in and just listen. And so I sat in, and the recitation began. And it was at the time that he was doing the Ganesh Puja, and all I was doing was just listening, just sitting there. I was drinking a cup of coffee, and I was just listening. That's all I was doing, And I could literally feel my mood shift. All of that bad emotional stuff just lifting off. It was quite amazing. Listening to proper recitation of Sanskrit language and the scriptures and stotrams and things like that, the pujas, it's incredible. It's amazing. The effect it actually has on you just from listening to it. So if you're actually reciting it yourself, that just becomes more advantageous. So, really take those things into consideration. But yeah, when it comes to actually using language in a ritual, just as I said, you don't need to learn the language. It is good to learn the language. I mean, if you can become fluent in speaking the language and reading the language and writing the language, that would be fantastic. But for someone like me who is terrible with languages, just learning enough to actually know that you are saying things correctly and you're not saying things wrong. So when you are coming back to the LVRP, when you are saying the names Uriel, Michael, Gabriel, sorry, Raphael, Michael, Gabriel, Uriel, you're actually saying Rafa'al, Micha'al, and then it's Javriel. Now, I was taught that it's not a G sound for Gabe. It's not Gabriel. It's not a hard G. It's a soft J. And the reason being that the G sound in this instance actually denotes war. And the B is often pronounced as a V. So it's not, it's for instance, not Gebura, it's Gevura. So we have Raphael, Michael, Javriel. It's an E at the end of Javriel, and then Uriel. Okay. So yeah, just that difference. I found, just that difference in the pronunciation makes a huge difference. It really does. Before I met Jacobus and he was started teaching me practical Kabbalah, I was doing the Michael, Gabriel, etc., etc., etc. And then he taught me proper pronunciations, and just using those proper pronunciations makes a huge difference. And there's very specific reasons for this. When you are vibrating the vowel sounds in the names, you are actually, it's a bit like opening gates. So when you are doing something a bit more advanced and you are moving through the sephira and you are opening the gate of that sephira and bringing that energy in, and you are vibrating the God name of that sephira, for instance, then what you're doing is you are vibrating those vowel sounds at particular points in the body and particular ways, and that's what opens the gates. So when you are, you're not just standing there and going Michael, you are going Michael. You're actually vibrating the name and the vowels in it and everything else. So it makes a huge difference, and I think you'll probably find the same thing. And now back to Ask Lee. All right, if you have any questions, please leave them in the comments to the video. If you're on listening on the podcast, you can leave comments, or if you on anchor.fm, if you're listening from there, I believe you can send a voice note, which would be cool. All right, but you can, if you're on the podcast, you can just leave a comment for me and ask a question, and I'll answer it in this slot. All right, so question number one, which is actually in two parts. It's from Linda Green. If Lucifer is an egregore, why is he worked with in traditional demonolatry? Is he just that powerful? Or is the demonolatry approaching a different aspect of Lucifer? Okay, so I'll sort that one out first. Lucifer is many, many different beings. And depending on your worldview, it's going to differ from person to person. So, first and foremost, within demonolatry, Lucifer is the elemental king of air. All right. Then, from there, extending from that, is very largely based on your own personal views, your own personal worldview. If you believe that Lucifer is a fallen angel from heaven, then he's a fallen angel from heaven. The Lucifer I work with closely is feminine and has horns and a flame between the horns, and that ties in with my traditional witchcraft background. So you're going to get Lucifer is just Lightbringer. It really is a title. If you look into the origins of Lucifer, you're going to find that it is basically just the light that comes from Venus. There's a close connection between Lucifer and Venus. In fact, there's a close connection between Lucifer and Noctifer, and obviously Venus, and the transition that Venus makes through the sky, the morning star and the evening star, and such things. Lucifer is also found in various other traditions and pantheons. It is Lu from the Irish pantheon. It is Lugus from the Celtic. You're going to find a light bringer or bringer of light in all of the traditions, in all of the pantheons, and this bringer of light in this case is gnosis, it's knowledge. So for me, Lucifer is the illuminator of the path. It is he or she is the bringer of knowledge and gnosis. And that's usually why Lucifer is in the East. In ceremonial forms of magic, we find that within demonolatry, Lucifer is the elemental king of air, usually found in the East, where air is usually placed ceremonially. In more traditional circles, it would be the place of the rising sun, the beginning of the day, spring, the awakening of energy, in order to then move around the cycle. And this is where we place the Lucifer figure in this aspect. It is the bringing of light, the starting of the day when the sun rises, and therefore it is illuminating the day and symbolically becomes illumination of the path. So as far as Lucifer being an egregore, let's have a look at it in a particular way. We're going to try and make this a bit more mundane and physical. And two examples. Let's say you live in America, North America, and you become part of the community. The people get to know you, they know who you are, they know your characteristics, they know your personality and such things. Then you move to France, and the people in North America still remember you, but then you move to France and you join a different community, and these people get to know you. Now, the way they get to know you may be slightly different to what the people in North America get, how they get to know you or knew you. So there's almost like a personality that gets created in North America, there's a personality that gets created in France, and then you move to a different country and the same thing happens. Another way to look at this is similar, but what happens is you are in North America in that community, they get to know you. You then clone yourself and put yourself in France. This clone becomes part of France, and those people in France get to know the clone of you. And another clone goes into a different country, and those people get to know that clone. So although they are clones of you, they are identical. People experience those clones in different ways, and they get to know them in different ways. So the clone in North America may be a shoemaker. In France, it may be a bread maker. In another country, it may be a key maker. And because of that, you are assigned different characteristics. Then you put them all together and we start overlapping and things like that. But these clones are very much sort of like the egregores that we're looking at. So where we have Lucifer in one person's worldview, who is the angel that fell from heaven, we have Lucifer in another worldview. Mine, for instance, I don't believe that Lucifer was an angel that fell from heaven. I believe that Lucifer is the light bringer, the bringer of illumination, and this becomes very, very different to the Lucifer that this other person has experienced. But they are still Lucifer, both of them. And these become egregores because as soon as a group of people start to work with that one particular personality, they build on it, and the group gets bigger and it builds more and more and more, and they become egregores. These egregores are no less powerful than the original forms. They are mostly what we work with nowadays, because the original forms have been so, I'm not sure I can say watered down, but they've moved from region to region to region, and through that movement, different people experiencing that spirit, it's developed into something slightly different. There are still remnants of the original form, but it has become something slightly different. Hecate is one of the perfect examples here because everybody associates Hecate with being a Greek goddess. But 1,000 years or 2,000 years before that, Hecate was found in Turkey, in Anatolia. Before that, we can possibly equate Hecate as having Egyptian roots. So, thousands of years before Hecate even became part of the Greek pantheon, Hecate was in different parts of the world. So, somebody who is worshipping Hecate from the perspective of the Anatolians, Persia, Turkey, they're going to experience Hecate in one particular manner. But if you are worshipping Hecate from a Greek format, you're going to experience these two same figures in different ways. And we can actually say that these become egregores, because the groups of people that work with it, worship it, give this particular energy body, this particular spirit, particular aspects, particular correspondences, and they give certain offerings and they worship it in certain ways, and this creates an egregore. Now, these egregores, I believe, and a lot of this is my own personal gnosis. It's also based on what a lot of other people have suggested and spoken about and discussed. So, we can't really tie it down to a absolute fact. It is a lot of personal consideration, perspectives, and things like that. But I believe that all of these egregores, if you take one particular god or goddess, all of the egregores that have been created by different groups all link to the original source. They are not separate from it. And we can go back to the concept that everything is one anyway. So even if you take all of the gods and goddesses, they are all the same. In that instance, I am very pantheistic and animistic, so that pantheistic side does come a lot through a lot on my videos. So everything is one and everything is connected. But it greatly depends on your worldview. But ultimately, from a demonology point of view, Lucifer is the elemental king of air. All right, and then you extend from there onto your personal views. The other part of that question, did the fall of the angels, Lucifer, and the other so-called fallen angels occur? If not, then are these being in conflict with the hosts of heaven at all? I don't know, because I don't believe in this. I don't follow a concept of heaven and hell, except maybe to extend the term heaven into being the upper world. When it comes to the fall of man, it's possibly slightly different to the fall of the angels. Although I suppose the conceptual, I think I'm going to have to examine that a bit further. But it's very mythological. It's used in allegory to explain, trying to put this into words, to explain a particular spiritual event that happened in the evolution of man. To try and put it very simply, if we were heavenly, we fell to earth, and we can use this concept with the context of man, we can use it with the concept of the fallen angels. So there was heavenly body, it fell to earth, and now it needs to find its way back to heaven. All right, and this really is just a concept of coming down into the root and then having to go back into the head. And that process continues. If you look at the Kabbalistic tree, the idea is that you go through a lightning bolt formation up the tree to Keter. And then once you're there, you come all the way back down again to Malkut, and you could do the journey again, and you keep doing the journey over and over again. If you look at Kundalini awakening, and raising Shakti energy through Sushumna, into the third eye, which then explodes through into the crown, and there's a union of Shakti and Shiva. Once that happens, you come all the way back down to the root. So it really speaks about this whole spiritual event, this mythology. I'm not really getting the right terms today, so excuse me for that. But I think you know what I'm trying to get at. I think a lot of people see this fall from heaven and the fallen angels and things like that as this literal thing that happened. But really, it is a concept from one particular power, from one particular religion, which is was used to explain something that happened, or explain something which is quite spiritual. And why do we fall to earth? We have to do that in order to find our way back to the top, in order to find that union, to find that that yoga, that marriage of the shadow self and the higher self, the marriage of I'm reading Peter Pan at the moment, so it'd be the Drake and the Crown. It would be that marriage of Shakti and Shiva. You've got to fall in order to find out how to get that union again. If we didn't, there wouldn't be any purpose, would there? There wouldn't be any reason for any of it. So, that's it. All right. Hopefully, I've answered that question successfully and succinctly. If I haven't, just give me a shout. All right, so the next question, I should have put my other glasses on. I can't hardly read at least. From Joanne. Hi, Lee. Thank you for your videos. My pleasure. I have a question. I have trouble with being consistent with basically everything, including magic. I think because of that, I have quick and powerful, but not really long-lasting results with my workings. But what worries me the most is working with demons. I absolutely love working with them, but recently I avoid it because I'm aware of how inconsistent I can be, and that it could be considered disrespectful. Is this really an issue, or am I overthinking it? Do you have any tips how to improve my magic despite my flaws? This is a difficulty and a problem for probably everyone, every single person. Is there a solution? There is a solution, but you have to be strict with yourself. You have to be very determined. You have to have a goal in mind, and you have to work towards that goal. So your goal may be to become more spiritually consistent. Now, the way you do that is largely by creating a habit. And what I would suggest is formulating a daily practice. We should all have a daily practice. There are going to be times when you just do not feel like doing it. We have our ups and we have our downs. We have our progression and then we have our plateaus, and sometimes that we've stepped back again, we step all the way back down. We have those moments, and we may have moments where we become ill and we need to take a rest. So, those things happen. You've got to account for them, you've got to take them into consideration, you've got to know they're going to come up. But even when they do come up, try to do something every single day, even if it's just sitting silently for 5 or 10 minutes. If you can achieve that, you've done something for that day. But formulate a daily practice. I'll give you an idea of mine, which is fairly new. I've gone on to a new, exploring a new path. So, a lot of my daily practice usually is waking up early, doing practices in the morning, and then continuing with my day. But what I've discovered is that, in the Hindu path, they speak about the sattvic energy, which is very balancing, very spiritual. And this energy is excellent to work with in the mornings for meditation, for mantra yoga for all of these spiritual things that we want to do. So I get up at 4 o'clock in the morning because that sattvic energy is active between 4 and 6 a.m. Some sources will say between 4 and 6, other sources will say it's an hour and a half before sunrise, and fitting in with my time frame, that is around about 4 to 6 in the morning. When I get into summer, the sunrise is going to be around about between 5 and 5:30. So there's a slight variation, and depending on where you are in the world, that could change. So I just like to stick to between 4 and 6 a.m. All right. Now I wake up at 4. I get up, I brush my teeth, I take a shower. And the reason for the shower is that water is a great conductor of energy. And when you're taking that shower, that sattvic energy gets infused into the water, and you wash yourself with that sattvic energy. And you can then, it's a cleansing shower, really. Then I will do some yoga, I'll do the sun salutation. And then I will get onto a satsang, which is kind of like a spiritual gathering of like-minded people who we in the morning, the one in the morning anyway, is reading from a book, and some prayers and some mantras and things like that. And after that, I will then do half an hour of mantra yoga. So that's my every morning ritual. That's my every morning practice. You obviously don't have to do the same thing, but experiment. Find what works for you. I mean, there were other things I was starting to try and include, like an oil massage in the mornings with sesame oil, which is very, very good for the joints and things like that. But once I've done that, got into the shower, washed it all off and made the shower all slippery and almost death-defying. Then it was a rush to do the next thing in order to get to the satsang, because that's a fixed time. So, I actually stopped doing it. I'll probably include it like maybe once a week or once every 2 weeks or something like that. So it is a very good practice. It has a lot of benefits. But starting to get off track here. So my point is, create a daily ritual, a daily practice, and stick to it. And obviously, during those times when you are having difficulty, you just do not feel like it. It's just one of those plateau periods or the reverse periods. You don't seem to be progressing. Those periods come up. You may go through a period of dark night of the soul. You've got to accept these things, you've got to allow them to happen, and they are times just to sit back and reflect. Just take that time to relax and allow yourself to basically assimilate all of the things that have happened, all of the knowledge you've gained. You can't just keep going up and 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 not take a time to actually reflect. But during those times, at least try and do something, even if, as I said, if it's just sitting silently for 5 or 10 minutes, you've done something for that day. And once you've created that habit, it just tends to keep on going. So you kind of get the ball rolling, and then you aphor away. When it comes to working with the demons and not being consistent, I think they do understand. I found that they, you have these periods where you're just working intensely with them, and then you stop. It's not like they sit there waiting for you or anything like that. They don't kind of knock you on the head when you come back and say, "Okay, let's carry on now." And they go, "Oh, you didn't talk to me for 6 months." That's what people do, really. And if you find a proper community, that's not going to happen either. If you do need that time away, you need that time to be by yourself, be silent, to reflect and assimilate everything that's happened. If you have a proper community, you can step away and then you can come back. And they're not going to go, "Well, you didn't talk to us for 6 months. Go away, we don't want to talk to you anymore." They're going to accept you back and go, "How did it go?" And if it's a proper community, you can go to them. You can say, I'm having this experience. I don't know what it means. Somebody in the community may know, may have had the same experience and may be able to help you through it. And then they probably will suggest to you, go off, be by yourself, be silent, don't speak to us. We don't want to hear from you for 3 weeks, whatever. And then when you've done that, you can come back and you are welcome back. And that's proper community. And I find that with the spirits, whether they're demons or whatever they are higher intelligences, they are divine intelligences. And, they're not stupid like we are, like humans. And, there are times when a spirit will knock you on the head because you were disrespectful or you didn't do something right, or they are teachers. Teachers can be like that. But generally, if you are practicing, and then you have that period where you just can't anymore. You're not feeling the energy. You're not feeling the movement. It's just not working for you, and you need to step back for a little bit. They're not gonna be angry with you or anything like that. So, yeah. Just create a daily practice, and start creating a habit, getting into a rhythm, and that should help. All right, so that's it for this week, and I will see you next week. Have a good one. As I said, if you have any questions for the Ask Lee slot, leave them in the comments. If you're listening on the podcast, you can send me a voice note or leave a comment wherever you're listening from. I should get it. And have a great weekend. I'll see you next week. Have a good one. Cheers. This podcast was brought to you by, well, myself, Lee W. Johnson. To find out more about me, please visit my website at leewjohnson.com or check out my link tree in the description of this podcast. If you like the video format, then subscribe to my YouTube channel, where I also host a live show every Friday with Rev Kai, called the Black Hat Chat. It's just two witches chatting about traditional witchcraft and other topics. That's me for this week. Hope to hear from you soon. Thanks for listening.